Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our Blog Talk Radio show, ECMO Advances Critical Care at the Center for Acute Respiratory Failure, with Dr. Kara Akerstrand. I'm your host, Susan Tansey Pfeiffer, and I'm also the program manager for the Adult Medical ECMO program at New York Presbyterian. In order to set the stage for today's discussion, let's talk briefly about respiratory failure. Hundreds of thousands of patients suffer from respiratory failure each year. Some of these patients develop such severe conditions that they require treatment in an ICU or a lung transplant. In order to help patients breathe while critically ill, a mechanical ventilator is often needed. But what happens when a ventilator is not enough? At New York Presbyterian Columbia's Center for Acute Respiratory Failure, a technology called extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, has offered critical patients a new option. In today's episode, we'll be speaking with Dr. Kara Akerstrand to learn more about what ECMO is and its use in the critical care environment. Now we'd like to welcome our guest. We are so excited to have you as part of our series, Dr. Akerstrand. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your position here at New York Presbyterian.
Thank you, Susan. I'm Dr. Kara Akerstrand. I am a pulmonary and critical care trained physician here at New York Presbyterian Hospital in Columbia, and I'm also one of the medical ECMO attendings. So that means I specialize in the care of critically ill patients with medical illnesses who require ECMO, things like severe pneumonia, asthma, or patients awaiting lung transplantation.
Thank you. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a couple of housekeeping issues for the listeners. Today, we are taking questions live. Listeners can call in to the number 347-539-5189 to speak directly with Dr. Akerstrand, or alternatively, if you'd like to ask us a question via Twitter, you can use our handle at Columbia Surgery. We're going to try to answer as many questions as we can within the next 30 minutes. However, if you've submitted a question and we're unable to get to it, we'll definitely follow up with you via email. All right, we have our first question. This came in through Twitter. How does ECMO work, and what is the goal of ECMO? So it's actually a two-part question. Dr. Akerstrand?
Okay, great. So ECMO, as you mentioned, is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. It works by providing temporary support to the lungs or to the lungs and heart while either or both are failing. So extracorporeal means outside of the body, membrane meaning that gas exchange, so the delivery of oxygen and the removal of carbon dioxide occurs via a membrane as opposed to in the lungs. Basically, blood is removed from the body via a large catheter, also called a cannula, that's placed into a central vein, usually in the femoral vein in the groin area or the internal jugular vein in the neck. It's then drawn into a pump that then propels the blood through an oxygenator. Now, this oxygenator is really comprised of a semipermeable membrane, so hollow fibers coated with a substance that allows for gas exchange to occur across it. That's where the magic happens. That's where the oxygen is infused. That's where the carbon dioxide is removed from the patient's blood. Then that newly oxygenated blood is reinfused into the patient via another catheter or cannula placed in another large vein. In the case of, you know, venous ECMO, this provides artificial support for the lungs themselves. Or if it's placed into an artery, this can provide support to both the lungs and heart, called veno-arterial ECMO.
Wow, that sounds amazing. We have another question, actually, that came in before the show. This is from Ashley T. Reading up on ECMO, it seems very interesting and an innovative technology. She's confused, though, as to how ECMO's exact role is, though. Is it a replacement for a conventional mechanical ventilator, or is it a supplementation to the ventilator? Why is it only used as a last resort?
Oh, so that's a very great and very insightful question, Ashley. Typically, you know, ECMO has been used as really an adjunct to traditional mechanical ventilation when a ventilator alone is not adequate to keep the patient alive. These are mostly patients who have severe ARDS, the acute respiratory distress syndrome, where the air sacs, the air spaces in the lungs, fill up with fluid. This can be secondary to something like pneumonia, trauma, or other illnesses. In some very specialized centers, like MLP for Columbia, for example, here, we're able to use ECMO as a replacement for a ventilator under very specific circumstances. This can occur in patients with severe ARDS, but more commonly in patients who are awaiting lung transplantation. When a patient is able to receive ECMO without a ventilator, the patient can be at times awake, eating, communicating, even walking, contributing and participating in their care. We're actually currently conducting a study that involves patients who are intubated for COPD exacerbations or severe emphysema, placing them on ECMO and taking out the breathing tube, taking them off the mechanical ventilator almost immediately thereafter. Oftentimes, these patients are older patients who may become extremely deconditioned when intubated or on a breathing machine for a disease like COPD. It's our hope that, you know, once on ECMO, they are able to, you know, maintain their physical strength and really maintain their ability to, you know, recover from the exacerbation in a more expeditious kind of way. So far, we've had great success with this, but it's been quite an exciting time.
That sounds exciting. So people are walking, talking, and eating while their blood is circulating outside of their body.
Yeah, it's actually pretty incredible.
That does sound incredible. We actually have another question. This actually also came in before our show from Gregory A. He wants to know specifically when ECMO would be considered in the case of ARDS.
So ECMO is used really in the most severe cases of ARDS. So when a traditional mechanical ventilator at maximal support is really inadequate to keep the patient alive. Typically the mortality around this condition in that setting is about 50%. So these patients are extremely ill. It's also often used early in the course of ARDS when the lungs are still very inflamed. By using ECMO during this time, we are able to reduce the pressures and the support needed by the ventilator and hopefully limit and further reduce any ongoing inflammation or damage to the lungs that can occur.
Awesome. All right, we have another question. This one came in from Facebook. I am a college student considering pursuing medicine in the future, and ECMO excites me. Its potential to help critically ill patients is promising, but it seems that ECMO is still a fairly recent technology. What is its history, and what type of studies are available to support it?
So congratulations on choosing a great career. But ECMO is not a new technology, though there's a lot of excitement surrounding it recently. It's actually been used successfully in children, usually babies or infants, for many years. The first successful use of ECMO in an adult for respiratory failure actually occurred in the early 1970s. But until very recently, really until the last 4 or 5 years, the technology wasn't good enough to really show and prove a benefit in adults. The use in adults really exploded during the 2009 H1N1 spine flu epidemic, where we saw many young patients previously healthy become incredibly sick with severe respiratory failure. Also around that time, a randomized trial out of the UK called the CESAR trial showed a substantial survival benefit when patients with severe ARDS were transferred to a specialized ECMO center. That's really the best data we have for the use of ECMO, but more research into its ideal use, the population who will most benefit, and how to manage patients on ECMO is certainly needed, and many of it is ongoing.
Okay, awesome. So, that's great. Lots of exciting studies coming out with ECMO, and hopefully we'll be part of a lot of that as well. We're going to take one question from a caller that just came in, Lisa B. If I am concerned a loved one in a critical state may benefit from ECMO and will need to be transported to a facility that has an ECMO program, can this be done?
So it is possible. Some very specialized centers around the country, we are one of them, in fact, are actually able to transport critically ill patients who would otherwise be too sick to move on ECMO. We have a mobile ECMO transport team that can actually go out to other hospitals, place a sick patient who's already on mechanical ventilation and usually not doing very well on ECMO, and safely transport him or her back to Columbia, where we can manage their ARDS or lung disease here in our medical ECMO center. So it takes quite a big and dedicated team to make that happen, but it's really something we do relatively frequently.
Great. Okay, we actually have a question from another caller, and this just came in over our lines. Thank you, Jim, for sending this question. What manner of treatment should be used prior to starting ECMO? Do all subjects get prone positioning, INO, or HPOV first?
So Jim sounds like he has a lot of medical knowledge and background. So patients who require ECMO or who we think are going to benefit ECMO are ones who really failed other advanced ventilator strategies. So that can mean different things depending on the hospital from which the patient originates. At many hospitals, this means things like the patient is receiving very high levels of pressure on the ventilator, high levels of PEEP, as we call it, 100% oxygen. Oftentimes, they're paralyzed. And if available at other hospitals, things like inhaled nitric oxide, as he mentioned, that can improve oxygenation and gas exchange, prone positioning, where the patient can actually be turned over, or at times, HFOV. High-frequency oscillatory ventilation. Depending on what a hospital has available, usually one or multiple of these advanced, what we call salvage ventilatory strategies, have been tried and failed before placing them on ECMO.
Great. Sounds like we try every option or lots of options before ECMO, but hopefully ECMO can go up in the ring of priority there someday. Here's a question from Sarah R. When being treated with ECMO, what doctor is caring for my loved one? Who else is a member of her care team?
You know, the ECMO team is really a multidisciplinary collaboration between multiple providers of various specialties. So from thoracic or cardiothoracic surgeons who often place the patient on ECMO, who actually cannulate the patient, as we say, pulmonologists, intensivists who will manage the patient's lung disease, and once they're on ECMO, and a whole host of other key members, including trained nurses, perfusionists, or individuals who are specially trained in any kind of extracorporeal technology, things like cardiac bypass and ECMO, nurses, nurse practitioners, physician assistants. We have a dedicated ECMO pharmacist, as well as physical therapists with a lot of expertise in working with these patients who all are involved in their care. Really regardless of the indication for ECMO or what type of ECMO they're actually on, all these patients are extremely complex and require really a dedicated, very experienced team of people taking care of them in order to help ensure that they have the best outcome and the best chance possible.
Great. So we actually just received a Twitter question that came from Couture C. If ECMO doesn't damage the lungs like a mechanical ventilator does, why can't we just use ECMO to replace the mechanical ventilator?
So that's a very good question. I wonder if someday we actually will, and that maybe we're actually moving in the future. The successful use of this technology, particularly in adults, is still very young. And it may be that as the technology improves, as it becomes safer and more applicable into not only very specialized centers, but other centers, it may be something that is ultimately able to replace the ventilator under some circumstances. And patients, some patients with severe ARDS and most patients who are awaiting lung transplant are actually able to have the breathing tube removed, so actually able to be off mechanical ventilation. But, we need to see improvements in the technology itself before I think that would be appropriate or even possible for all patients.
So it sounds like the coming years may have some positive changes, hopefully, with ECMO use.
I think so. It's very interesting to think that just thinking about the history of extracorporeal cardiac support. So now patients can be at home with VADs or ventricular assist devices, living at home really on a form of extracorporeal technology. And I wonder and I hope that in 10, 15, 20 years, we'll be there with ECMO for pulmonary support as well. I think there's a lot of exciting things down the road, and I'm looking forward to see what becomes.
Okay. Couture C actually had a follow-up question. He wants to know, or she wants to know, what the drawbacks are for ECMO use, if any.
There are several drawbacks. So, ECMO is still what we call a salvage mode of ventilation or salvage mode of support, meaning that it's really appropriate when other measures have failed. That's partly because of some of the complications associated with ECMO. So things that can occur, people need to be on blood thinners to successfully receive ECMO. So sometimes there can be bleeding complications, things like gastrointestinal bleeding or other forms of bleeding. Sometimes people can have what we call hemolysis, where blood cells are actually destroyed by the circuitry themselves. In addition, patients can have some complications from the actual placement of very large catheters, you know, in veins or arteries. All these complications are have been significantly reduced in the last 10 years or so, which is one of the reasons that ECMO is now much more successful in adults than it once was, as it's a much safer form of support.
So it sounds like the benefit of putting patients on ECMO, or at least when our hospital, when your team puts patients on ECMO, that we actually, you know, do a risk-benefit analysis, and the benefits kind of outweigh those risks at the time we decide to make that decision.
I mean, that's exactly right, and that's really why you have to carefully consider each patient for ECMO first. And that's why, to allude to one of the other questions, you know, ECMO is kind of used, you know, so to speak, you know, as a last resort, because we want to make sure that the risks of putting someone on extracorporeal support of circulating their blood outside their body are not going to outweigh the potential benefit they can receive.
Great. Also, just wanted to remind listeners while we're here, while we're taking a break, that we can call in live, 347-539-5189. Keep the questions coming. Also via Twitter, at Columbia Surgery. We're getting some great questions here. We really appreciate your interest. I also want to bring up that we received a great comment through our blog that you might appreciate. It comes from Maureen S. Maureen says, ECMO is a lifesaver, literally. Amazing doctors and the machine itself have enabled me to continue with my life. Thank you to you all again. I will be listening today. So, hi, Maureen. Thanks for being out there and supporting us today.
Thank you, Maureen.
Okay, we have a question from John W. My sister is on ECMO. While I know she's in good hands with the doctor, what do you recommend my family and I do to help during the healing process?
Wow. John, so I hope your sister is, you know, making improvements. You know, certainly any patient who is critically ill, you know, ECMO patients, you know, being part of this population, you know, often have a very long recovery process. Things that I think are helpful to do for the families to do are just really to let, you know, your loved one know that you're there for them, that you're there supporting them, talking to them, you know, kind of reassuring them that things are going to be okay. You know, oftentimes patients who wake up from critical illness, they don't remember what happened. And it's really their families who are the ones that are the most shocked and the most surprised. So I think, you know, letting your sister know, like, this is what you've been through and things are getting better, this is where you're going, can all be helpful for her in her recovery process.
That's great advice. We've seen in our program that, you know, families who ask a lot of questions and who keep themselves informed and feel like they're part of the process, and certainly here at New York Presbyterian, I know we make sure the families are part of the entire process from the beginning until, you know, the outcome is reached that hopefully we all desire. And I think that's great advice, Dr. Akerstrand. Here's another question from Brian G. Is ECMO ever used before, during, or after a transplant, a lung transplant?
So ECMO can actually be used during all of those times. Sometimes patients who are awaiting lung transplantation, so patients who have end-stage lung disease, things like maybe cystic fibrosis or severe pulmonary fibrosis, where the lungs are very stiff and unable to oxygenate the body, have an acute decompensation, what we say. So maybe they have the flu, or maybe they have another acute illness that kind of takes them from their place of chronic illness awaiting transplantation to really a state of acute illness where they may require ECMO prior to the transplant. One of the benefits of using ECMO before transplant is that unlike with a mechanical ventilator that often requires high levels of sedation, sometimes even paralysis to allow adequate gas exchange or oxygenation to occur, with ECMO, these patients can sometimes be awake, talking, hopefully walking, as I mentioned before, and interacting in their care, really maintaining and optimizing their strength prior to transplant. Some of those patients ultimately are transplanted while still on ECMO and may or may not require ECMO post-transplantation until their new lungs start to work.
So it sounds like in these cases that the ECMO can actually be used to extend someone's life until the lungs become available when previously they may not have even made it to the point where lungs became available. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So one of the most important predictors of survival after lung transplant is physical conditioning and your pre-transplant fitness, so to speak. So as opposed to being sedated, lying in a hospital bed for maybe a week or two awaiting lung transplant, these patients can actually be up, maintain their strength, and really extend the time that transplant would benefit them.
Wow, that's just
it's
amazing.
It's really
stuff.
Changed the course of a lot of people's lives in that way.
Great. So someone from Facebook wants to know, what kinds of medications are used while being treated with ECMO?
So that really depends on why the patient is on ECMO or why the patient needs ECMO. As I mentioned, patients who are on ECMO do need to receive a blood thinner that circulates throughout their body, helping the blood pass through the ECMO circuit without developing any clots or thrombosis. Oftentimes, patients are often receiving antibiotics and other things for pneumonia or other infection that may have contributed to the reason they need ECMO in the first place. But it's really variable based on the person's underlying illness.
Dr. Egerschen, I just had a follow-up question to that. I know that you said that we sedate some of the patients and some of the patients are awake. How does it differ now in the more recent years to how much narcotics and sedation and things like that we used in the past years? Has that changed over the years or is that the same?
With patients on ECMO, I would say we're probably using significantly fewer narcotics and other sedative medications, mostly because this added support, you know, allows the patient the flexibility of, you know, being more awake and interactive while still receiving, you know, adequate oxygenation. You know, throughout the last 15 years or so, there has been a decrease in sedative and narcotic use in ICUs overall. I'd say this is particularly true with ECMO patients, especially those awaiting lung transplantation.
Great. And here's a question from KCN. What are the advantages of treating with ECMO as opposed to a conventional ventilator?
Some of the advantages are, number one, that we think in the case of severe ARDS, for example, the high pressures and the high levels of oxygen that can be needed when someone has the most severe forms of respiratory failure, so severe pneumonia, severe ARDS, where their lungs aren't working at all, can actually further damage the lungs. It's called ventilator-associated lung injury. That added pressure at high levels of oxygen can actually worsen someone's underlying pneumonia and ARDS and perhaps prolong their course to a point beyond recovery. One of the main advantages of ECMO in these patients is that that support from the ventilator can be reduced to less harmful levels, where the pressures and oxygen can be given at safe levels, allowing the lungs to really rest while they recover from the pneumonia or the illness.
So that's a pretty cool concept. So the lungs don't have to work, but the body still gets what it needs from the ECMO machine.
Exactly. We actually call it lung rest, allowing the lungs to rest as the machine does its work, as opposed to stressing the lungs further when someone is, you know, incredibly ill with a pneumonia.
Yeah, it sounds like the ventilator is pretty tough machine. Maybe, and we maybe want to get rid of it someday.
it's a medieval instrument of torture.
All right. We're coming to a close with our questions here. Here's one of our last questions with Sarah Marie T. What can I expect after being treated with ECMO? It's a two-part question. What is the recovery process like?
So the recovery process, like with any critical illness, is very variable depending on the patient, how long they were sick for, and really what caused them to be ill in the first place. Many patients need to spend, you know, a week or two in an acute rehab facility building their strength once they're medically improved enough to be without ECMO, without a ventilator. Some patients are able to improve more rapidly, though, and, you know, able to recover from the pneumonia or severe ARDS and, you know, go directly home after, you know, usually 2 to 3 weeks.
Great. So I guess it really depends on what their what their course is, how they were beforehand, how sick they started out, and sort of how their hospital course
kind of
through.
Kind of all those things. I mean, some patients, even the duration of time one might need ECMO, maybe as little as 4 or 5 days. If maybe they were able to be caught early and their lungs were able to experience a quick turnaround. Some patients require ECMO for much longer, a week or two or even longer than that, mm-hmm. If they have a slower recovery process. So it's really quite variable.
Great. Well, I think that we received a lot of wonderful information today from you, Dr. Egerstrand, and we'd like to thank you so much for your time. Your answers were very informative and clear, and we hope the listeners really have a better understanding of what ECMO is and what it can offer to patients with severe respiratory failure. I'd also like to thank the listeners for tuning in to ECMO Advances Critical Care Practice at the Center for Acute Respiratory Failure. If any of you would like more information on our Center for Acute Respiratory Failure or ECMO, please visit our website at www.nyp.org/ECMO, or you can email any non-urgent questions to us directly at ECMO@nyp.org. If anyone submitted any questions that we weren't able to get to during the show, we'll definitely respond to you by email. And thank you all again. Thanks for tuning in, and have a healthy day.